Pictured on the slide is a calm sea, and we have just sung about that, and that no doubt is the way it looked before certain events happened in the Philippines. We have heard repeated many times this week the word typhoon. Typhoon Haiyan has wrought destruction that is nearly unbelievable. The 7,000 or so islands that comprise that island nation have been affected in a way that will never be forgotten, and has rewritten the history of that nation. I believe there are lessons that we can learn from that as we think about that unbelievable destruction. From outer space, this is how it looked as that storm descended upon that island. You can see the swirl, and you can see the force that is descending upon that nation. Villages were destroyed. I heard just yesterday that now they're saying more than 600,000 people have been displaced. That is a lot of people in that nation, and that over 4,000 people are dead or missing, and the toll continues to increase. You have seen many of these pictures. One of the most chilling scenes that I have seen is those where they show the body bags and show, as you can see in this picture, people looking through those bags to see if they can find their loved ones. Unimaginable suffering that those people are enduring. Now, move your mind for a moment to the calm after the storm. And these people look out upon a calm sea, but as they do so, there are questions that come to their mind as they think of that calm sea, yet the unimaginable devastation that exists all around them. Many thousands are dead, are missing. The toll continues to increase daily. Property damage is beyond calculation at this present time. No way yet to estimate how much damage monetarily has been done in that nation. Change that will affect their lives as long as they live and their children's lives has come to many millions of people. When this sort of thing happens all over the world, people begin to ask certain questions. These are questions probably that you have asked this week and you have thought about as you have watched a repeated coverage on the news. One question that people often ask is, why did God allow this to happen? That is always a question, not just in enormous suffering that attracts worldwide attention as this destruction has, but suffering in all the ways that we suffer, and we think of God and say, why does He allow that to happen? Who or what causes such suffering? Often we personalize it and say, what have I done to bring this upon myself, or what have we done to bring this upon our nation? Philosophers and theologians for centuries, I have wondered about that and have asked those questions, and I do not presume that I could answer all of those questions, but I believe that there are certain observations that we can make that are scriptural and that will help us in such times. And then how can we prepare? And I think our lesson this morning is an effort in that direction, to fix our minds on certain things so that we can, in fact, prepare for suffering. First, why does God allow suffering? God is good. He is all-powerful. There is no question about that. We have sung together, the winds and the waves obey His will. He is the master of storms. He certainly has all of the power, and reflected again and again in the Scriptures is the fact that He works through natural events and very often reveals His will through those events. And so there's no question as to the power of God. Why then? Why does God allow suffering and sorrow and heartache and death, even among His own children? People who are trying to do right. People who are following His will to the best of their ability, and yet they suffer. Why is that? Did Eve, the first mother, ask that question when her son was killed? I would guess that she did. Why did God allow this to happen? Why? He gave me this child, and now he's dead. And why is that? And so it is a universal question. It is a question that has plagued people all through the history of the world. Perhaps you have asked that question as suffering has come to your life. There is no adult here who has not known suffering and who has not experienced perhaps the death of those whom he loves. And so that is a question that we ask. That question was certainly asked in the Bible by Job. As far as we know, Job was never given a direct answer to that. We know because of inspired revelation that Job was being tested and that a mighty contest was going on between God and Satan, and that it is a living demonstration inspired of God revealed to us that there are those who can hold on to their faith in spite of what happens to them in this world. And so we know some things that Job didn't know. As far as we know, it was never revealed to Job why he was suffering. And so here are things often that we simply have no answer for, but we are called upon to have faith and to trust. Well, some observations that we can safely make. Number one is that suffering keeps the world from being too attractive. Suffering makes us realize that we do not go along very long in this world without encountering suffering. And because of that, we are to think of this world in a certain way. Peter says, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts that war against your souls. In other words, we are to think of ourselves as passing through this world on our way to a better place, and that this world is not our home, and that we must not think of it as our final abode. I know we build houses and we make improvements and we construct a life and we save and plan and retire and do all of these things. But we must remember that this world is not our home. We are pilgrims. We are sojourners. And therefore, we are to walk in a certain way. I think of our sense of permanence and how often we struggle so hard to make that which will last, to construct that which will last a long time, on and on. And we say, my children and my children's children and theirs will certainly enjoy this, and I'm building this to last. But the Bible teaches us that here we have no continuing city. There is no permanence in this world. And he says, but we seek one to come. And I think that's very important, that we, not that we are going to be going around with a sad face every day, but we must simply realize the reality of the fact that this world is not our permanent dwelling place. And if we have that in our mind, it gives us a construct. It gives us a way of thinking that will help us to put things in their proper order. When you think about the fact that even the body in which we dwell is going to be replaced, this tent will be replaced by a house that is designed by the Almighty. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 1, we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. And so we have that which God will give us that will last through eternity. And so we anticipate a new body, free from aches and pains and free from the effects of aging, and a body that is suited, that is fit for eternity. Paul talks about that at length in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. and shows that we serve a God who is able to make bodies of birds fit for the air, bodies of fishes that are fit for the sea, and that he certainly can construct a body for us that will endure for eternity. And that helps us as we think about our life and as we think about the life to come. And so suffering helps us to put things into perspective and to realize that this world is not our final home. When you think about that question and when you think about that issue, you realize that some people in the world have, shall we call them, opportunities and have settings in which we may not participate, but we can learn from their situation. We have not had destruction on this scale. In this area, the tornadoes were terrible. But you look at what has happened in the Philippines. And when you think about that, that should help us greatly to put things in perspective and realize this world isn't our home. I read several years ago a letter from a missionary in the Netherlands in which he made this interesting observation. He said the Dutch people are not people who are very optimistic. He said in every world war, our country has been quickly overrun. They fell, his country fell before Nazi Germany in one day. And so he said, we as a people do not have a lot of confidence that our government can defend us and that our way of life can be preserved. But then he went on to say, that's good. And that helps us when we present the gospel to show that here is a place, here is a way that leads to life eternal, and there is a better world. And so even with that frame of reference, he saw a way that was an advantage for the gospel of Christ. Imagine what it would be if there were a world that is without suffering. No one would want to leave this temporal world. Sometimes our situation is so good in many ways that we want to hang on and hold on, and we wish that this would never end. No one would desire an eternal home if there were no suffering, if there were not negative things that happen in this world and in our lives. And many people live as if that were the case. I want to read to you from Psalms 49, verse 11. As the Lord talks about the fool and the brutish person, and he said their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever, and their dwelling place is to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. They act as if they're going to live forever. They build their houses. They name their structures as if they were going to continue forever. And the Lord says such a person is very foolish. And we need to take heed and look at the wisdom of God as he reveals these things to us. And we see that especially in times of great disaster. Suffering often brings out the very best in people. I thought of that this week as I heard among the news of the great destruction that was taking place, that had taken place. Of the relief efforts that are coming in from all parts of the world. And the fact that people cooperate. And I was interested in seeing that the Russians are sending aid. And I thought, here we are sending aid and people and doing all kinds of things. And they're doing things, and other nations are. And nations with whom we do not get along with very well, here we will work shoulder to shoulder to help alleviate that suffering. And so often the very best in people comes out in time of suffering. Someone loses a house to fire. A child is lost in the woods. The current world response to the typhoon. All of those make us realize that disaster and suffering often brings out the best in people. And people are led often to God and think thoughts about eternity in times of suffering in ways that they hadn't before. And so suffering has that side to it, that it often brings out the best in us. Suffering may cause us even to reflect back on the lessons that early Christians were taught, as they were taught particularly in the book of Hebrews about their suffering, and in the book of 1 Peter, and so many passages. The book of Job I've mentioned. So many passages remind us that early Christians in times of suffering realized how precious it was to be the Lord's. Christians are actually told, and this is difficult for us to imagine, to rejoice in trials and tribulations. In the book of Romans chapter 5, verses 3 and 4, but not only so, but we glory, Paul said, in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. I never read that passage, but that I do not think of an incident, that happened to me several years ago. I heard that my neighbor, old brother Tom Corum, who preached for many years at Greenbrier, was very sick and a lot of pain. And so I went to his house, knocked on the door, and he didn't come to the door, but I heard from within him yell, and he said, "Come on in." And so I came in and found Brother Tom at his kitchen counter, and he was just draped over that. And I said, "Brother Tom, how are you doing?" And he said, "Well, if I try to lie down, I'm in such pain I can't stand it. If I try to sit up, I'm in such pain that I can't stand it." There was some disintegration in his spine, I believe. And he said, "The only way I can get relief is to be bent over this counter." I said, "Brother Tom, that's terrible." He said, "No, it's not terrible." He said, "It's good." I said, "Good?" He said, "Yes, I need to learn patience." And I thought to myself, here is this old man who is suffering so much, and he sees it as an opportunity to learn patience. What an attitude. And may we imitate those who, out of suffering, learn great lessons and become examples for us that will help us when we suffer. When you think of such expressions of confidence and faith in the midst of suffering, we're certainly reminded of the principle that every trial, every bit of suffering through which we may pass, has the potential to make us better and stronger. May God help us to approach it that way, and to think as things befall our lives, and as disappointments and heartaches come, that if I can endure this, God being my helper, I'll be stronger when I come out on the other side. And that certainly is one of the good things that can happen in suffering. A third thing, and the final point I want to make this morning, is that suffering may give us an occasion to silence the enemies of God. Satan certainly thought that by bringing horrible suffering to the life of Job, that he could prove that Job did not serve God for naught. That if he took away everything that wealthy man had, and then took away his family, and ultimately took away his health, and left him in pain and misery, and with no explanation as to what was happening, that he would curse God, that he would turn against him. And he was wrong. Job's experience proved that there are those who will serve God, not because it is always a good time and things are going well, but who will serve God regardless. And Job did that. God desires that we, by patiently enduring the things that happen to us in life, that we silence foolish men. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 15, "So is the will of God, that with well-doing you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men." In that passage, as well as much of 1 Peter, the apostle talks about suffering and the trials through which they were passing, and even states that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perisheth, though it be tried by fire, may be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. And so the trials through which they were passing gave them an opportunity to put to silence the ignorance of foolish men and to silence the enemies of God. I want to mention two passages, and there are dozens of passages that you could look at this morning that capture this thought somewhat. One is in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, 17 and 18. Paul, after having described the many, many things that had happened to him, and there's a great list of them, all of the things that he suffered. He said, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more and exceeding an eternal weight of glory. And so, light affliction and great glory. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. And so Paul was able to correctly put all of those experiences that were so disappointing and so painful into proper perspective. And he said, what I am going through is working out for me a far more and exceeding an eternal weight of glory. And so the weight of glory is very heavy. The affliction is light in comparison. If we were able to see on the other side, then we would see that the things through which we pass are light in comparison to the heavy glory and blessings that will be revealed for us. And then a second passage in Isaiah 55 that Olin read a little while ago. In times of suffering, and particularly when there are great natural disasters, as we have witnessed in the Philippines and on the news, we are reminded afresh that God's ways are not ours. My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. And so God's purposes, God's methods are often quite beyond us, and our task is to trust and to obey. I think there are certain conclusions that we can reach. One is that suffering helps us to see the world as it really is. And often it is not a pretty picture. Often there are horrible things that are happening in the world and that happen in our lives. And that helps us to see how the world really is. It may bring out the very best in us. If we are, in the words of the Hebrew writer, exercised thereby, if it accomplishes the good that it can accomplish in us, then we end up on the other side of that suffering, stronger, tougher, better able to serve God with greater faith than we have had before. And suffering does give us extra power in dealing with Satan. And when you patiently endure and people around you see that, they will be impressed. Not that one does it for that purpose, but they say to themselves, how can they endure? Surely it must be because of what is inside of them. It must be their faith. And by that, we become great witnesses of what God has done in us and for us. I'm going to close with a story of how in the old days Persian rugs were made. I'm told that there would be a large framework put up, and on that frame would be the backing, the coarse material that is the structure of your rug from that part of the world. And those are made by other methods now. In the old days, the designer, the artist, would stand on one side, and on the other side would be a series of little platforms at different levels. And in the days of child labor, children would be sitting at those different levels with rolls of yarn in their hands. And the artist on the one side would bark out his instructions, and this child would put through this color, another would put through this color. But sometimes the child would make a mistake, and in those areas where he or she was supposed to put their yarn, their thread, and loop it and so on, they would make a mistake. They would put it the wrong place. But the story goes that if this were truly a great designer, a great artist, that he would not fuss at them or have them to remove it, but he would simply work it into the design. And perhaps this color that was mistakenly put through here would be matched by one over here, and he would weave all of that together. I suggest to you that the architect of our lives is a great artist, and that he can weave into the fabric of our lives even our sufferings and even our mistakes, if we yield to him and do the best that we can, that he is able to make of your life and of mine a beautiful pattern that will last for eternity. May the Lord bless us as we look at the things that happen in this world, and as we look at the things that happen in our lives.